You got some important details that you need to pass on to travelers in the event that they haven't gotten the email or checked their email either.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, so I appreciate the time again. But there are some changes that upcoming, of course, for the flight departing next week on Thursday, November 18th. And this is just a schedule change or time change. The flight will depart as scheduled on the 18th of November, but it will depart earlier than expected or as normal. So the flight from Honolulu will depart Honolulu at 2 p.m. or 1:59 p.m. and will arrive here in Pango at 6:33. And then the return flight will be at 9:30. So the message here, of course, is we're urging all passengers to take notice of the changes. We are changing our office hours as well, or at least the ticket counter hours, to accommodate the earlier departure. So we will open the ticket counter as scheduled from 2 p.m. until 8:30 when we close. The security checkpoint will open from 6:30 until about 9 o'clock. So some slight changes. It's a couple hours earlier, but, you know, some necessary changes. That's needed for our pilots to allow more time for them to be on the ground. Also, to accommodate our high demand and, of course, the high volume of wheelchair passengers who require a little bit more assistance and time to get on the airplane and off the airplane as well. So just want to make sure that message is out there. Please, we will continue, and I'm hoping the advisory reached you and your team as well, John, to communicate to the people, let them know about these changes, and we're hoping that nobody comes late, because when that flight leaves, it's going to leave at 9:30.
That's good info, and yeah, get there a little bit earlier, and you know, you don't have to rush off to your connecting gate or anything like that. Got a little bit more time to work with, so good right. Info there, Tuli. Thank you very much for sharing that with us, and I think you put that out to most of your travelers too, because I sent that to some people I know that are on the flight, and they're like, yeah, we got this, but good that you came right on the radio and just, you know, reminded everybody.
Thank you, John. Yeah, and the same communication has been sent out to all of our passengers, all our travelers, via email or phone. We're hoping that everybody has access to emails. This same change, of course, applies to all of our passengers traveling from Honolulu. So the majority, of course, of our passengers will be in Honolulu anyway, by at least this Sunday, as they're required to be in Honolulu for the second test. So we're hoping everybody has received the communication. If not, we're, of course, our lines are open if there are any questions. We have been receiving quite a few calls since the change was made yesterday, which is good. That means people are receiving the emails and the notifications of the changes. But just one thing I left out, John, is the flight will arrive at 4 o'clock in the morning in Honolulu, which allows plenty of time for everybody who has connections into Honolulu. Some are as early as 7:45, some as early as 8 o'clock. So this allows them plenty of time to get into Honolulu, get a little bit of rest, and, of course, get ready for their flight departing out of Honolulu. Just a reminder as well, please, for those who are traveling into the state of Hawaii, to pre-register with the Safe Travels program. State of Hawaii is monitoring every single person that's traveling into the state. So a reminder to all of our passengers for that as well.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you real quick, how did that go on your last flight? Like the first flight with Safe Travels Hawaii, some people kind of got stuck in quarantine when they weren't trying to. Any improvements on this end for that?
Right. Thanks for your question, John. We actually had a session and a training session with the state of Hawaii yesterday with our team. It was a good hour session discussing the problems or the issues we've had in the past. The previous flight data has not been received as of yet, but preliminary notes have showed great improvements. So really, it's just a matter of those who are traveling to Honolulu to make sure they pre-register. And if they don't pre-register, of course, the state of Hawaii will have people prepared and ready in Honolulu to help them as well. We still have quite a few people who have not pre-registered or had on the previous flight, and we expect the same for next week. So, you know, if you do not pre-register, you know, we will have people in Honolulu that will assist with that process as well. But, yeah, no data as of right now, John, but preliminary numbers show that there's a great improvement so far.
Well, that's really encouraging. Sounds like, you know, just some growing pains, a little bit of a learning curve, and you guys are got our people on top of it. So mahalo lava to you and your team, Tuli.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Tom. Really appreciate this morning.
Okay, yeah, you too.
Yeah.
All right. Likewise. Happy Veterans Day, man.
You too. Thank
All right. Take care. 93 KHJ American Samoa's Best Music Mix. News time coming up here at around 7 o'clock. Sit tight for that. Samoan Sunrise continues. Rolling Stones and Beast of Burden. American Samoa's best music mix, 93KHJ. We have an in-studio guest that we want to welcome ahead of an important day that is coming up, Dr. Early from the VA. Good morning, Doctor. How you doing?
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me.
And World Diabetes Day is right around the corner, right?
World Diabetes Day is this Sunday. Actually, the month of November for the American Diabetes Association is Diabetes Month as well. So thank you for having me over to talk a little bit about diabetes, something that's been ignored while we're busy with COVID and for the past 2 years.
Right. And obviously, it's an NCD very prevalent among the populace here, I'm sure, as you've seen through, you know, your work as a doctor here. And maybe you can give us some knowledge on
that's
diabetes.
Correct. At least with our veterans, probably close to 40%, if not more, are diabetic. And then maybe another third of that are pre-diabetics who don't know that they are tending or trending towards diabetes. So it's important for people to start looking at some of the symptoms and signs that might indicate their higher risk and go in to have it checked. You can't rely on symptoms, particularly for type 2 diabetes. People talk about polydipsia and polyuria, the increased thirst, increased urination with diabetes as a sign. But in type 2 diabetes, that doesn't occur until 15 years after you've had the disease, when the blood glucose levels are up over 350 or so. And then you start spilling glucose in your urine, and with that, you draw out water, so you're urinating a lot. You become thirsty because you're losing water with your in your urine. But that's late, and that's why a lot of our patients who have diabetes, they show up with vision problems, they show up with numbness and tingling in their feet because they've had diabetes for years and not realize it. So knowing what your family history is, knowing your age, certainly the older you are, the more likely you are to get it. However, with our obese population now and our eating more processed foods, imported foods, we're seeing diabetes down in grade school.
Jeez. So you mentioned that frequent urination and more thirsty are telltale signs, but that's like later on. What are like some of the early signs that you should be aware of?
Unfortunately, there are no real early signs for type 2 diabetes. Again, a lot of the symptoms show up after you've had damage to the nerves, damage to the blood vessels in your feet, but that's late. There are no real good early signs for type 2 diabetes, particularly when you're running glucose levels in the mid-100s or low 200s. You don't spill urine, or you don't spill glucose at that time, so there are no symptoms. You have to be aware of your family history. You have to be aware of what your weight is, whether you're sedentary or not, your age. Go in and get a finger stick or get a blood test to show what your blood glucose level is. That's the only way to really tell.
And how early should people start doing the finger stick and checking to see if they have?
I think with a family history, if you've got siblings who have diabetes, if you've got parents who have diabetes or grandparents, then the earlier I would check, late teens or early 20s, I would start checking every couple of years just to be sure that your blood glucose levels are not climbing. Again, a fasting blood glucose for someone who has normal blood glucose handling should be below 100 milligrams per deciliter in the morning. If it's after a meal, if it's less than 2 hours after a meal, it should be less than 200.
This is Dr. Early from the VA talking about diabetes, telltale signs of it. Now, when you're talking to your patients, and you sound like you see a lot of patients, do they know what you're talking about when you mention like glucose and decimeters and some of these big medical terms?
Well, I try not to use big medical terms. I think there are certain numbers that people should be aware of, like the for a diagnosis of diabetes, fasting glucose of 126 or above, a random glucose of over 200, hemoglobin A1C. Those are all numbers that people should be familiar with, and I try to talk to them and teach them about that. Hemoglobin A1C is a real important number for someone who is diabetic. It lets you know where your average blood glucose is over the previous 3 months. Hemoglobin is what carries oxygen around in our blood. It's found inside the red blood cell. Red blood cell lives for roughly 120 days or 3 months. During that time, as it's transporting oxygen, glucose binds to the red cell and hemoglobin and forms this compound called hemoglobin A1C. So the higher the glucose level is in your blood during those 3 months, the higher the A1C is going to be.
Is high A1C a bad thing then?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
So someone who's not diabetic, that A1C is below 5.6%. Between 5.7 and 6.4 is pre-diabetes, and above that is diabetes. For someone who is diabetic and is well controlled, it should be around 7% or lower. Certainly in older people, you don't want to push them too close to normal, because then you run the risk of hypo or low blood sugar reactions.
Okay. And can you die of diabetes specifically, or does it kind of perpetuate some other event like a heart attack or a stroke?
You generally die of a lot of other things, complications of diabetes. And, you know, people do die from extremely high levels. People die from extremely low levels. But it's usually the complications that arise. If you have diabetes, your risk of dying of a heart attack or having a heart attack is the same as someone who's already had a heart attack.
Okay.
So even though you don't have symptoms of angina, that is where there's a lack of blood flow to a certain area of your heart, if you exercise, you get that crushing pain or discomfort, feeling short of breath. Those are symptoms that maybe you're not getting adequate blood flow to the heart. You see that in people who have obstruction already, and they're fortunate in that they have symptoms, they go see their doc, have an angioplasty or bypass, and they do well. For a diabetic, they may not have any of those symptoms, but because of the weakness in the blood vessels from inflammation of diabetes, high blood sugar, they will suddenly have a heart attack, and that's all she wrote. A lot of our diabetic patients don't have the typical symptoms of angina, the crushing substernal chest pain, and they may come in with a toothache and little neck pain, women with sharp pain in their chest or over their shoulder blade. And if you're not taking an adequate history of exertion associated with it, stress associated with it, you may ignore it.
Okay. And you can manage diabetes, though, right?
You can manage diabetes very, very well. I've had people with A1Cs at 13 and 14 and now normal. We've got new medications that in our armamentarium that helps tremendously. One of them works on the kidneys to help you get rid of glucose. Your kidneys work by taking back the glucose. It's first filtered through the many filters in the kidneys, but then as it goes through this loop that filters your blood and urine, you reabsorb most of the glucose, and that's why you don't have symptoms until glucose levels are well above 300. So with this medication, you block that reabsorption of glucose, and you get rid of the glucose, you get rid of water, and it's shown to be very, very helpful in protecting one's heart. We have another one that slows the emptying, gastric emptying of the stomach. So it doesn't artificially lower your blood sugar. It doesn't lower your blood sugar like insulin does, but it slows the gastric emptying. It makes you feel full earlier. I've had a patient that's lost 70 pounds with that injection, and it's a once a week injection. So they're new medicines that are available now. Unfortunately, with our pharmacy, they've got a very restricted budget or limited budget, and so they can't afford to get a lot of these newer medications.
But you can order them and then buy them on your own, right?
You can buy them with a prescription from your physician, yes.
Okay. So, yeah, because a lot of people, I mean, you've got great info, but, you know, you only see veterans, right?
Right.
Right.
Unfortunately. But, you know, I'm willing to, with groups would like to discuss diabetes and get help with diabetes, I'd be more than happy to meet with a group and talk to them about it.
And just one last thing, what habits, daily regimens can we change to control diabetes?
I think it's our eating and our moving. I think if we can
But
get
eating
people,
what specifically?
going back to natural foods, I think we are eating too many processed foods, fats in our foods. A lot of our drinks have artificial sweeteners like high fructose corn syrup. Our bodies don't know how to metabolize these new man-made chemicals. And so when you're eating a lot or drinking a lot of high fructose corn syrup, you end up with uric acid. Your liver metabolizes it into uric acid, which increases the risk of gout, increases your blood pressure. It increases the bad cholesterols, the LDLs, VLDLs in your body that then get stored as fat and we gain weight. So if you drink a can of soda every day for the next year, you probably gain 10 to 15 pounds for most.
And that's just one can.
One can a day.
Most of us can sit here and put away a whole six pack.
Right, right. And so
you know what other thing I saw? It was diet soda. They lie. They say it's zero calories, and it's not.
No, it's not the calories. It's the other chemicals that are in there, the artificial sweeteners that are in there.
Yeah. So you look at the ingredients on there. There's a bunch of big chemical names that I never heard of, but like you said, it sounds very man-made. Nothing natural in there.
No. If you go back to eating off the land and eating things that are not fed antibiotics and other chemicals to fatten them quickly, I think we'll do much, much better.
Well, that's a problem too, though. Like if you just want to eat, like I want to go to buy some chicken breasts or whatever. Now they put all these, you know, like you said, these steroids, all kinds of junk and unnatural things to get more for their buck, huh?
So you try to do the best and get the lean portions of meat, smaller portions of meat, and then go back to eating vegetables and more carbs that are plant-based.
Okay, stuff that just grows out of the ground.
I think you've got guests who come on here, McDonald and Spitzenberg, that talk a lot about that, and I think they're very good in their approach to weight loss and getting healthier.
Okay, and have you helped people turn the corner with that then, some of your patients?
We try to encourage them to move. To exercise. We don't have a specific exercise program, but some of these programs that are available in the community, but just encouraging them to move.
And then eating right. I think eating, what do they say? Diet is like 90%, exercise is like 10% of a good.
Right. I mean, if I go jog for an hour, I'll probably burn off one chocolate chip cookie.
That's such a ripoff. Right? The when you do the numbers, I mean, it really is how much you can eat versus how much you can burn. And there's so many, like you said, a chocolate chip cookie, one of those processed hamburgers that tastes so good, but then just kind of sits in your stomach for the next 24 hours.
Right. So it's really the food that we're consuming and how much of it, actually. You know, if you go back to old day Samoa, when they had a kōngai, they'd have a small woven tray, woven from coconut leaf, where they bring the food in. Nowadays, you go to a kōngai and it's three large aluminum trays full of cakes and pies and fat and
soda.
Somehow we consume it.
Right. I mean, you can absolutely tell. Just I always get a kick out of watching KVZK because they have all this great archive footage from what this place looked like maybe 30, 40, 50 years ago. Even there's a couple Facebook groups that post old photos. And, I mean, it's night and day, you know, versus just how fit, slim, active people were versus the sedentary lifestyles that we do now where we just spend all our lives in front of a screen, phone in one hand and, you know, food in the other.
Yeah, no, and that's definitely something that, you know, you could... KVZK certainly has a lot of photos. There have been studies that were done by the people from Providence, Rhode Island, compared Samoa to American Samoa back in the early 60s and 70s, and they contrasted the difference where they were more the traditional diet, where we've already moved to the Western diet, and the obesity here, hypertension, diabetes, compared to Upolu were so much different, but now with them coming up, their diets changing.
They're becoming more westernized, you mean?
They're becoming more westernized. They're seeing the same problems with kidney failure, heart disease.
Do Polynesians, Melanesians, just Pacific Islanders in general, do they have a predisposition to being diabetic? Because, you, I mean, you talk to somebody now and they're like, well, I'm supposed to be big boned. I'm, you know, I'm
right
naturally big. Samoans are big, right?
We're big, we're muscular, but we've become more sedentary and we eat the wrong stuff that goes into fat. Unfortunately, it's what we eat.
And fat is not muscle.
No, fat is not muscle.
Okay. All right. Not supposed to be fat. I see. Well, you can, like you said, though, and I've seen a number of people do this, too, where they kind of just turned the ship around where, you know, they were very large. They had a big BMI, and right. they've been able to right that ship just by eating well and exercising.
That's the key to it, is just moving a little bit and eating the right stuff, cutting down on how much we consume.
Okay. So don't throw in the towel and just say, hey, I'm just going to enjoy life, and you know, if I die as a heart attack next year, that's so be it. I mean, you can take control of these things.
Yes, you can. And unfortunately, you know, we're seeing more of our people die at an age where they should be productive for themselves and for their families.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you should be living to like 70, 80, 90, right? And
right.
some of these, I see it, you know, the sunrise, sunset on the newspaper ad or the car decal, and you do the math and you're like, wow, that person was only like 35, 40.
30s, 40s. And, you know, that's such a sad event. It's something that's preventable, and all it takes is just a little effort.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that is kind of frustrating, though, is especially with the economy the way it is now, is it is to eat clean, it's expensive.
It can be, yes. I mean, we're importing almost everything, the prices are going up. But look at the wealth that this place has. I mean, we're not starving by any means.
That's true. I've yet to see a homeless person.
Yeah, so, I mean, if we make the right decisions for our families and for ourselves, I think we can live much healthier lives than what we're seeing today.
Fair enough. Okay, so, you know, just what you decide to spend your money on.
Right.
Right. Do I need that new iPhone, or should I maybe, you know, buy some greens next time I'm in Psychostulus or whatever? But what I'm saying is, like, the purchase typically is like, all right, well, I can get 5 bags of lettuce for $30, or I can get 2 cases of turkey tail. I don't know what turkey tail is, but you know what I'm saying? Like, turkey
right.
tail's cheaper, which is horrible for you, but it's easier on the wallet than a healthy.
Right.
So you're
That's
just saying.
True. I mean, there are certain portions, pieces of meat that you can buy that, you know, are much less fat, but again, you go to watch them buy it on weekends, and the Pofi Masima, sometimes I don't see any red on the pieces that are going out, and I'm wondering, geez, do you know what you're consuming there? I mean, people just need to be understanding what they're putting in and what it's going to do to their bodies.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and kind of spelling this out for us, because, you know, somebody might be listening saying, you know, I didn't know that. Or I need to, you know, reevaluate my purchasing decisions. Do I need to make car payments on my F-150, or do I want to live, you know, an extra
right.
20 years?
Yeah,
and eat clean.
There's so much advertisement out there that makes all this sugar and all this fat look so appealing to everyone that they don't understand what it's actually doing to their bodies to increase their risk of dying early.
See, his aunt always had this very famous saying, a moment on your lips, forever on your hips, where you get that instant gratification.
That's a good one.
Right? Because it tastes so darn good. But then, you know,
you have to pay for it later.
Like you said, an hour of running, and that's only one chocolate chip cookie. So, all right. Well, this is Dr. Early here talking about World Diabetes Day, which is this Sunday, and just a generally productive discussion, we hope, for American Samoan. Doing our thing with guys like Will Spitzenberg and Mike and Paula McDonald to fight diabetes and obesity here on island. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
All right, 93 KHJ will continue after this.